人，
真是真带气。听你讲的那个不要听你要起来，你是慢的。
你
今天没到谁。So my name is Kevin Figueroa. I'm here to speak about Scappy today. Unfortunately, I left my laser pointer, so I'll be going back and forth to point at the screen. To give you a little brief background about me, I love security, computer security, and been to many different conferences, spoke at DEF CON, I spoke at HOPE, did some papers, and spoke to George and he wanted me to come in and do a speech. My brother was here last month doing a speech on Leopardus. I know some people came last month, others didn't, but it's a thing about firewalls and honeypots. But going on to Scappy, I was introduced to Scappy about 2 years ago. And I really thought it was an awesome, interesting type of program because you can manipulate packets and you can do a ton of other things also, but the fact that you can manipulate a packet was really intriguing to me. Of course, we all know how the internet works and without packets, you can't receive information back and forth. So, at my lab that I have, it's quite big. You can ask George, you can ask Ike, you can ask Donnie over here. We have a lot of unique, different types of equipment to start testing this stuff out. So 2 years ago at DEF CON, me and my brother and another gentleman, we did a presentation on VLANs and Layer 2 hopping. At the time, this was the equipment. This right here on the bottom is a 4006 Cisco switch. 90 something ports, 2900 calendar switch, and another 2900 calendar switch. We set that up for the presentation, and I'll get into it a little bit later, and it'll show a breakdown of programs. But when I got introduced to this, because we were using so many different programs, our laptops was like kind of loaded up with all these different programs. Does anybody do security in here?
No.
No. As much as you have to, no more.
Okay.
And
the only reason why I ask that question is, if you're into security, you know that they have like port scanning for NNAP or something like that. But, and I'll get into it later on, but understand that due to the fact that all those different programs was on my laptop, it was weighing in and I figured, you know, they introduced me to Scappy, let me see how this works. So the reason why I wanted to show the picture in the lab was this is where most of the testing was done. It's a lot bigger, like going this way, we have more equipment, and going this way, there's more equipment. But this is the Cisco equipment that we are testing it on. This gentleman right here, Philippe Bonnier, is the author of Scappy. The one, yeah, he does look like a Hezbollah person, you know, but there is no doubt about what was on his brain when he made this program, and I'll explain why. The first thing is that Scappy is a multi-purpose security tool. You can use it for many different things, like scanning, sniffing, analyzing, dissecting, forge, manipulate, transmit, probe, and definitely do attacks. Another cool thing is that Scappy is written in Python. So when you load it up in a command prompt, you'll see a Python interpreter come up. So you can actually write Python code inside the Scappy interpreter, which is a really, really great feature. Just want to speak briefly about installation. It's pretty much on any operating system. I know that most of you in here don't use Windows, but if you do try to go and put this on a Windows box, good luck. You will have a huge, difficult time. And the information that's out there to load this up, load Scappy up on Windows, it's unbelievable. Oh, another bad thing about this gentleman is for the last 2 years I've been trying to contact him to get better documentation out there for him. I went way beyond what was meant for Scappy to do, and there wasn't enough information out there. No documentation, just recently he put out 2.0, so now he has like a whole full-blown wiki page and things like that. But another thing that I don't like about him, there's certain things inside Scappy that it could do, and there's no documentation out there for that. So I don't know if he meant to do that on purpose to keep it a secret so he has those little tools for himself, or he just was lazy and didn't want to put the documentation out there.
What kind of tools are you talking about?
Oh, I will definitely get into all the tools. I mean, there's a ton of tools. But in order to get all the functionality out of Scappy going good, these are some of the programs that you're going to need. This is so you can do graphics. You can actually, there's commands. So inside Scappy, if you're, say, doing a promo for load balancing or something like that, and you want a graphic to come up to show you how the packets, how the load balancer is handling these packets and how it's being sent, spread after passing the firewall, it has that option. Enum, which is like NumPy, which is like a plotting type of X and Y access in order to help the plot, NumPlot. Also, this is another dependency. PY Crypto, that's for Wi-Fi encryption. Scappy automatically will decode packets right there on the spot.
Is that web only, I guess?
Web only. Yeah. They are libraries for WPA. I have a 40 gig rainbow table that will probably take anywhere between 15 to 20 hours to crack WPA and WPA2. Or you can go the easy way, have Amazon rent you a server, pay their stuff, and then crack, put all the rainbow tables on their stuff, and then crack it off their processing because they have a lot more processing power. Two more things is NMAP. Oh, the Wicked stuff hasn't even got there yet, but also NMAP. And the reason why I say NMAP, not that you're going to use that, but there is a module that Scappy can import certain tasks that NMAP uses, and also another graphic tool. And the reason why I put this slide in, but
isn't that from like Old Bell?
Yes,
that's
real.
Yes,
it is.
I used it this week.
That old?
I used it this week.
But the reason why I put that in there, because it wasn't until last week that I finally got all my graphics stuff to work on my laptop. And the reason why was certain document that Philippe has on his server was given to me. And while reading that document, it pretty much states on how to set these stuff up correctly. Once again, why he doesn't have that as public knowledge and he has it only for himself, I don't know. But I thank God I was able to get that document. And once I installed all these different type of functions, add-ons or plugins, whatever you want to call them, all the graphics were coming up with no problem. This is an interesting slide right here. Back in the days, remember that commercial, this is your brain, this is your brain on drugs, any questions? Well, to me, that's what Scappy is. This is the internet, and that's Scappy blowing up the internet. And as I move later on through the slide, you'll understand why I say Scappy can blow up the internet. Well, not really the internet, but mainly networks. Okay, why Scappy? More functionality than any security tools I've ever used. And you'll see what it, all the different types of programs that it uses. You can definitely, like I said before, you can definitely remove a ton of pen testing tools if you perform pen testing. Like I said, also it's written in Python. You can easily create, if any Python programmers here, you can create your own Python program and import Scappy as a module, which I thought was really awesome because now, well, I'll leave that off for later on in the slide and I'll explain a program that I wrote and how I employed Scotty to do certain things.
Is there a lot out there? I mean, is there like
useless No. I'm not saying that, no, to be rude or anything like that, but that was my first question. Why isn't there anything out there? And besides you, because I know you know him, does anybody know George Neville here? Alright, well, I spoke to George. He made a competitive program to Scotty. It's called PCS, which the reason why I'm glad I spoke to him about it is, unfortunately, like this gentleman, I can't get in touch with Felipe to do an update or look at this or add this on, but because George is part of this group, I definitely want to look into this stuff to see if it's along the line with that, but at least for somebody like George that's here, once a month you can speak to him, add, subtract, where with this gentleman, it's very difficult. It's been 3 years and I still can't get one email from this man.
And the word development and the application going on in the meantime?
Not at all. Now, I don't know why, you know, the last update he did was 2.0.1, and he loaded in some VoIP stuff. He loaded in,
what's the license on?
Open source. Good question. Off the top of my head, I don't know. But I think, and I'm not sure, but I think it's like OpenGPL.
What country is he based in?
France.
Germany, that's one of the outlawed any security software
development.
You're not allowed to do security research in Germany.
Speak to me because there's a loophole, and a bunch of my friends who live out in Germany was the ones that explained this to me and how they're able to have NMAP and all this. And what he's saying is not incorrect, it's totally true. If the German government finds out that you have like NMAP or something on your laptop, you will get arrested. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The last point that I want to bring up is, even if you're not a Python programmer, you can still use some of the documentation out there and still be able to play around with Scappy. I have a gentleman right now who is interested in learning about Scappy. He has absolutely no programming knowledge at all. But the fact that he's able to read this 3-page document and understand exactly what to do, it'll be enough little by little if the person's interested to go out and look for more resources and information. But until this new version came out, there was hardly any documentation on this. You know, they had a bunch of PDF slides that almost all the PDFs were exactly the same. And I think what he was doing was going to different cons, speaking about this and doing speeches and promoting it, and at the same time just using that same presentation, and he put them up with different names. So if you go out there and look for presentations, just be careful on the names could be different, but when you download it, they look the same. So once again, you don't have to have any programming knowledge in Python in order to use Scappy. The next thing, and this is how many programs for you, is it definitely replaces a lot of programming tools. Testing tools, scanning, footprinting, and attacking tools.
What do you mean by testing? Like
next slide, I'll show you exactly what
the name is.
But don't stop. Keep asking. Don't worry about it. But for the people that say they do security here, this next slide is going to be really interesting. Okay, as for testing, things like connectivity, ping, traceroute, basic networking stuff that you can do. As for scanning, NMAP, AMAP, HP3, Unicorn Scan, TTL Scan, Ice Scan, and Firewall. Remind me, I don't know if at the end of the presentation I speak about in detail about the firewall, because I do have a lot of slides that I want to go through, but remind me to bring up Ice Scan and Firewalls. As for sniffing, Ethereal, which is no longer Ethereal, it's Wireshark. TCP dump, Net2 PCAP, CD sniffer, AIM sniffer, I thought was kind of cool. And there's, I know some companies out here allow Yahoo, aim and stuff, it's quite unique on what you can sniff out when you get these tools. When you get it operating and if people at the, in your environment are using it, if you use Scappy as a sniffer, almost using it the same way as the aim, it's quite interesting what you can get when they're instant texting back and forth to somebody. And of course, the rest of the programs with scanning. More programs for packet forging. There's a list up there. Two of the most known and popular is the ArcSpoof. I do believe there's one more. HPing 3 also does some packet manipulation. Went to the mass for fingerprinting tools. The most common are NMAP and POF, but you have KSO, iScan, AMAP, and SyncScan. As for attacks, there's a lot more attacks that you can do, but the real interesting ones, of course, DNS, Yesenia. And the reason why Yesenia is going back to the second slide where I showed you the Cisco equipment. Well, Yesenia is basically like an anti-Cisco. That tool lets you perform serious amounts of attacks against Cisco. VLAN hopping, DHCP starvation, a ton of different type of attacks. The next thing is, I know that most of you know the type of protocols that are out there, but I brought it up for the people that don't. Interesting enough, of course, you got your application layer, transport. Of course, this one right here is the most important in Scappy and WISE because TCP and UDP. You have DNS and DHCP up here. Scappy can use most of all these protocols. And I have a list of all the protocols. But it's funny that in order to do certain pen testing attacks or scans or something like this, you may, on different protocols, you may need a lot of different programs. Where if you don't have time to memorize, and this is one of the reasons why I like Scappy, is I don't remember all the options in NMAP. Minus S, minus O, and then let alone that I gotta go pick up another program and remember the options for that. You know, so there's a ton of different type of programs that you'll have to memorize and options. Well, I figured if I can write my own packets with these own protocols, why would I ever need any of those programs? Okay, the next one is slides. It's about six slides that I'm going to go through. I list all the protocols, and I wanted to do this on purpose because there's been more protocols added, but these are some of the important protocols that Scappy uses. Of course, you all know what ARP is. The boot, DHCP, the reason why is because, like I said before, Yesenia uses, there's an option in there for you to do DHCP starvation. Does everybody know what that is? And you starve out the pool?
Yeah. Huh? It's usable the leases, I assume?
Yeah, exactly. And there's no more IP addresses to go do that. DNS, of course, because we know what happened with the vulnerability last year with DNS. Of course, it's been fixed, but so another reason why I put DNS up there is, of course, you know about the records in DNS. Well, I'll get to it in a second, but you can make a packet to add a request to the DNS, and chances are you may get a reply back that you shouldn't. But I'll get into that in a minute. So here's some more protocols. This whole protocol right here, wireless. You got more wireless up there. You got the web.
I'm sorry. What? So it said DNS and DNS record on the last slide. So it's like zone transfer versus lookups?
Yep.
Like TCP versus UDP?
Yep.
Okay. Sorry.
No, it's cool. And anybody else choose to interrupt or please be free to stop and get what's on your mind off.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead.
What is Linux?
Pardon?
Linux?
It's a protocol that I don't know why he put it in there. I've seen it twice before, but there really isn't like a defined type of thing on what this is. Why you put it in there, there's a ton of protocols in there that I've never even heard of. He put it in, maybe it's used out in Europe that I don't know about, or, you know.
What was the protocol question?
Cook limits,
as opposed to raw or well done. Raw protocols, ICP, these are real, real cool. Of course, the ISA CAMP, which Microsoft uses, and then your L2CAP. The last one on the bottom, you can really, really destroy a network if you make a packet with this, and I'll explain the, later on, but with that last protocol, and I've done it in my lab at home. Everybody know about the SMB vulnerability, right? And of course it got patched. I'm still doing research, but I think there is a problem with the patch that they cracked. So, using Scapy, I'm still trying to do some more testing to bypass the vulnerability, to bypass the patch that they put for the vulnerability.
This is also a user tool for research.
Honestly, I use it for that reason.
Research.
And yeah, it's you. Good way of putting it.
Clarify that, right?
Well, from now on, you know what? Since we're on that topic, every time I want to say the word hacking, I'm just going to use research instead. so we know exactly what we're talking about. But yeah, definitely. I'm doing more SMB research, but I love the fact that Scapy has that protocol inside of it in order for it to, you can go and do that. Where, name another program out there, unless you're writing it yourself and not writing it yourself, that actually uses that protocol.
WireShark's got tons of protocols.
No, wait, hold on. But there's WireShark.
If you like it, it's different.
I was going to say, but there's WireShark performance hacks. WireShark is not meant for
the only program.
Exactly. It's only for scripting. Yeah. It's only for. Well, you can't really reverse engineer and call it research if you don't actually do something and make it happen, you know? You have to actually do it in order for it to say it's a successful or unsuccessful research. This right here, this Bang Tree protocol, very, very, very deadly. And the reason why it's so bad, yes, there's two options to this. You know, if I'm me in my corporate environment, I'm going to put STP up. Why? Because I'm going to put an OSIMS, which is like an open source monitoring system. So it has to have that open. But the reason why I would keep it open is because this monitoring system will detect, making sure that no ports, nobody is changing ports, nobody's taking a port and changing it into a trunk port or anything like that. So if any changes, manipulation, or anything happens to the Cisco box on the port, the OSIMS open source tool will detect it. But if they don't have something detecting or monitoring and you have spanning tree protocol, I really suggest, use that protocol. Getting back to you for your other question, what was the cookie thing? Has anybody ever seen any of these protocols?
Skinny.
Well, Skinny I've seen before, but it's...
CBAC is for honeypots.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Look at that.
CBAC is what?
Honeypots. But once again, I've never used it, I've never seen it or anything like that, but the fact that he had it in there, I thought was interesting. Like I said, there's a ton of protocols in here that I have no means of wanting to research and no means of wanting to understand what those protocols are. Unless it pertains to research. And of course, the last one is the TCP protocols, your RIP, your RIP entries, PPP, power over Ethernet. Hold on. I'm going to get to that in one second. And I forgot, they don't have a protocol for power over Ethernet. But can you hack power over Ethernet? I can give you an answer, yes or no, within the next 3 months. That's something that I'm doing research on. And what I'm trying to do is, and think about this, because this is the way things are going. Google, Verizon, and Con Ed. Why Con Ed? I don't understand why, but they're having technology right now that they're pushing internet through your power.
Yeah, my little brother, he...
Which is unique.
That.
Yeah.
Like 2 or 3 months ago, he was talking about the stuff and all that.
Power
over Ethernet is the other way around, though.
It's really
on
more wires.
That's not power over Ethernet. That's Ethernet over power.
Okay, but the whole thing behind this was, I wanted to see exactly what on the motherboard was giving the extra power out to the Ethernet. And am I able to reverse engineer that in order to exploit, and instead of pushing whatever wattage has to go out through power over Ethernet, I demand, or I pretty much say what power, so I can either take the time to do something roughly that and lower it, or blow something up and put high power. But once again, I'm still doing research, so that's not definitive on that. So digging right into it now that you have a little background on it, for C programmers, in order to write something that will actually go out, push a packet out, put it back in, you're going to have to write 100 lines of code. And with Scappy, you can do the same thing with 2 lines, which I thought was ingenious, especially that when I first got into Scappy, I didn't know too much about Python programming. Like I said before, it's an interpreter, so it's not, it'll open up like it's a shell command, but it's not. You'll see like 3 little arrows showing you the Python interpreter. And the reason why I like that is because since now that I do know Python programming, inside the interpreter I can write code and actually execute it from the interpreter right away instead of having to save, you know, run the script, Python dot whatever the name is, dot py.
Yeah,
I think it's
someday you can do it with any Emacs.
Would
be wonderful.
I took a snapshot of the config file. The reason why I did this was because some people came and asked me, like people in the hacking community, because not gonna lie, I go to a lot of hacking conferences and
research.
But I wanted to make sure that I put, I don't want to say I go to research conference, because then they're talking about it, you know? But a lot of people at the conferences, they know that I love Scappy and I play around with it, so they always ask me, what problems? Why can't I get Scappy to work? Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? And the first thing I do is I go open up Scappy and I do a CONF, which will bring up all the configs. 9 out of 10 times, the reason why Scappy's not working is because of this routing issue. Honestly, all the other stuff, even if you don't know what it is, everybody in here knows about routing, gateway, and stuff. Like I said before, 9 out of 10 times, this table's off. So they misconfigured their gateway, or they misconfigured, you know, their IP address or something like that, and that's why Scappy's not able to send out the packet and bring back the packet. And so
Scappy's not just reading it off and gets that information or anything else.
No.
It's just purely going at users configuring saying, this is my address. Why do they have this manual thing as opposed to automatic discovery and so on? Is there a reason? Is it because you're spoofing and or pretending, whatever you want to call it?
No. The reason why is because if I go and send a packet with no source, and it's the pin of death with no source, and you can do this. I'm not going to say I did it from experience, but the
research,
exactly. You can actually send packets out without a source, which is kind of unique. That's, I mean, I've never even heard of anybody else with Scotty came along.
So that's why they keep the IP configuration.
So no matter what you do automatically, your source address comes up. But I'll show you how to bypass that, so no matter if that's configured or not, how to remove your source from the packet that you're making.
So you mean, I don't mean to harp on it, just
keep on.
The angle's not missing, exactly.
Sure.
It's defining which interface, if you have multiple interfaces, say, for instance, you know, a couple of wired NICs, wireless bus.
No, it will not, you have to manually put in what NICs you want. It'll automatically detect your LAN connection, your network card, not your wireless.
What you want to use
right.
on the fly, and send the comp file, and then if you want to change it, you just change the comp file, or...
No, what's the only thing set inside this comp file for this routing table, and that's pertaining to your local NIC. So if you don't have your NIC jacked in, and you're on Wi-Fi, you're going to have to manually tell it, look at my Wi-Fi, instead of, but 9 out of 10 times, you're going to get that, and it's always addressed towards the name. Why he didn't put that option in, and that was one of my first things, because I wanted it always to go with my Wi-Fi. I have a laptop that has 3 Wi-Fi antennas, and I wanted it to be attached. I wanted to have multi-different sessions going on each different Wi-Fi, and I'll explain why in a second. Not in a second, but in a little bit. So getting to your question, you will have to manually set it up if you want to do it for Wi-Fi. But at the command line, you can easily just put iface=, and then the name of your Wi-Fi, and it'll automatically shoot that packet out to that Wi-Fi. Next is TCP flags. Real, real important why I put this up. Can anybody give me a common TCP flag?
Gigabit.
Why would you pick that one?
So funny, man.
Is that because you're speaking about research? besides that, when a very common known one. There you go. Or SIN.
SIN.
So you got it now. But so there are 255 different flags. And the reason why I put this up is because can you send a SIN and a reset at the same time? You can't. It's impossible. Not with SCAPI, you can't. Why would you do that? There's many different reasons why you'd want to do that. But it's definitely for research. All right, jumping back into create a packet now. Does everybody know how a packet looks, visually looks? More or less? No? Yes?
I see them. I can tell you how they feel if you put them on the counter. I see what money can have to
take
with them.
All right, well, moving on now. Why can't I switch? I showed you all the different protocols, so if you do IP open close parentheses, you'll get that. A is the variable, so if A equals and DST for destination equals, I put my first one I'm saying on here.
Is that a suggestion?
No. I would do like it depends, you know? Put whatever address that you want.
That's the word I was looking for, invitation.
I don't suggest.
Use another example of that problem.
I'm going to let you know now. And I'm glad that you brought that up. If you do, make sure I don't catch that IP address.
Don't worry, put on one line to change it.
That's what I'm saying.
Starbucks.
I even get you better. Make sure you use Mac Changer before you do that to my site. Alright? And I'm very serious about that. I love to catch people and IP addresses that do crazy stuff to that website. And you'll see one of the victims later on why.
Is the body intact?
Is the what?
Is the body intact?
Is the body. No, the person's in China, so I can't really go over there. And I wouldn't do anything malicious. I'd do it the same way you're trying to do it to me, over here. So if you go ahead and do a dot and then DST, it'll automatically just extract this information from this portion of this packet. You can set your TTLs, time to live. By default, it's set to 64, but you can go ahead and change it by doing a dot TTL equals 32, and it'll automatically change it. If you go ahead and delete a dot TTL, it'll automatically set you back to 64. So, any questions before I move on about making this one packet? And this packet is all it's doing. It's going to go out to my website, hit it once, see if it's alive, come back with a reply. It'll tell me whether it's port 80 is open, closed, or anything like that.
Yeah, just a question.
Sure.
Does overrule the kernel when it comes to the TTL parameter?
Yeah.
It definitely
overrule.
How he did that?
Right? So you got to be grouped to run this stuff.
Yeah. Definitely has to be grouped to run. I was able to get that inside the program. I didn't really dissect the program.
It's raw socket. You can use this at sea level. I'm sure the Python is just a wrap around it.
We have access to the.
You know, because this has some crazy settings. So yeah. How easy is that? I'm just wondering.
Yeah. It definitely does. Do it without using the rules from the kernel. So,
do you have access to the Ethernet fields? You can change the Ethernet protocol.
You have access to every single piece of information in the packet. Everything.
Well, one packet, like Ethernet, you know, if we're going to talk about Ethernet, a frame, it's not a packet. Packet's IP.
Sorry, but that goes at the beginning of the frame. Yes, you do have control over that frame.
Cool.
Anything else before moving along?
Yeah. So, going back to the Ethernet question, you know, Ethernet is one net frame mechanism. Yeah. Like TDP, you can do it over. DSL or TDP over the internet. But you got Thinnet, tons and tons of different frame mechanisms. How much does it have access to? Wi-Fi has got its own kind of frame in and so on.
Right. As long when you. I can't show you now because I don't want to move forward, but you'll see later on that it'll say Ethernet, open and close parentheses. If it's Ethernet with an open and close, it'll automatically pick up which one is the one that's accessing the internet and use that. If not, right there, you just specify.
Well, so you'll get Ethernet. You know, at the IP level, you can change the destination of the IP packet. I assume you can change the source in the same way. But
you can change the MAC also. You can change.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you can totally. You can take an IP address from one machine and put the MAC address of another machine.
But what's the. I know you showed us the list. It's got a large number of TCP protocols, TCP protocols, it can handle IP. But, why can it handle the underlying, level 1, 0, depending on your set layer of Rito?
I would assume whatever system that you're using it on, however you're communicating out, if you're able to see it on the interface, plug that into it.
I don't have IP, because pretty much any Unix you have, no matter what kind of NIC you put in, it's going to be able to deal with IP for the most part. So IP is a common denominator, mm-hmm. but the individual framing mechanism is not necessarily common. 10Base2 used to be really popular, but it's not anymore. So, does it still handle 10Base2? Does it handle token rate? That kind of shit.
I'll give you a perfect example to that. Honestly, I don't know the question, but I know that I know that my NIC card knows how to handle all that.
Right.
So I'll leave it up to
God. Stuff is up through Python,
right.
So you have to
me,
that interface.
Right. To me personally, I know that, you're looking for the answers on that. I don't know. Off the top of my head. But what I do know is, regardless on what it is, if I actually go ahead and just assign it to my NIC card, however my NIC card uses PPP, connects to DSL, or anything, I let that NIC card do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to sound all Cisco or everything, but I think you're confusing the players and the OSI model. I mean, if you have a card that you're in Total Ring Network and you
from your feed to the wire frame, your hardware.
I can't hear what you're saying.
If you can't do the NIC card, you're probably going to do it. You cannot do whatever
Total Ring on that.
I don't actually think you can talk about that. It's something to do with the packs.
Well, the same link layer is just the literally, but the physical part.
Well, the question is, why would you want to do that? And what are you trying to accomplish? That I can show you something completely different and a different angle to do this.
Well, for one thing, you brought up the example yourself of like ARP versus like you can state your MAC address. Mm-hmm. Like ARP is something that's Ethernet specific. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't apply to a number of different link layer protocols. So that's why I bring it up. I mean, like that's a valuable mode of researching something.
Right.
And I'm curious like how that might apply. I mean, I know Ethernet is a commodity these days, everybody fucking uses it. It was really just curiosity.
Sound like a
purpose.
This is
like a nine-level special without like IPsec overhead radio.
Yeah.
Alright. Moving on, I'm just going to show exactly how to send out a screen a pink.
Regular open access is going to use Caesarean crypto.
So here we go. I set up a variable called ICMP equals. And when you do a protocol in SCAPI, you have to make sure that you capitalize the protocol. If you lowercase it, it'll error out. So you have to make sure that you can set ICMP lowercase, which is a variable equal to that protocol that has to be in uppercase. Or else the SCAPI interpreter or Python interpreter doesn't know how to handle it. So what I'm doing in here is, in the last slide, remember that I used A to determine IP and destination. So now here, I'm actually sticking an ICMP packet to the IP packet in here. So what I do is I make it a new variable equals A, which was the IP packet /ICMP, and then on the front end it'll come out with this and attach the other protocol to the packet. Which is cool because then you can wind up putting a DHCP and an ICMP packet. Why would you do that? I mean, there's no need that it doesn't exist, but the fact that it could be done is great.
Is there an easy way to dump all the fields in the
packet? Dump all the fields in the packet?
No. Showing the packet.
Right. There's no way to actually dump it. You have to physically type it. So when
you created the packet.
Right.
And you assign some fields to it.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them are default.
Default, right.
So is there like an easy way to just visualize?
The best way that I do it is like me knowing that I do pen testing. So So I think of all of the different methodologies and scenarios around it, and then I'll set up templates. And then I'll just drop whatever template in. It'll propagate all the information that I need, send it back.
Right. So it says like since it's written in Python, you could write some kind of object inspector or there's built in some language you could look up there. You could actually take your object, your packet back or the one you're creating and just do an inspection on the whole object and
or you can just use Wireshark.
But personally, I really use Wireshark, right? But by the way, so if you want to use Wireshark, do you know that there's a vulnerability out there for Wireshark?
I did not.
So for the people that do run Wireshark, there is, it's not a zero day because it's out already, but it came out in February, and if anybody wants a script, if you have pain drives, I'll give you the script to actually go ahead and do a buffer overflow against Wireshark. So that's one of the main reasons why I don't use Wireshark. Because I'm not going to have anything
happen. Is that accept the PCP dump too?
No. It's just the vulnerability of Wireshark.
Well, it's all
the
ECAP.
Yeah. So going back. Alright, gentlemen, so going back, once I send the packet out, it's in four, got one, and the one that I got back, it shoots out this information. The reason why some of this information is good, and I'll show you much later on in further details, is usually, for instance, if you pick on Wireshark, you can't get all this information out of Wireshark.
No, you can. You can.
You can.
It gives you a raw packet.
You can.
You can
actually see
raw.
What's the raw?
Hold on.
You can see the raw payload of a packet.
Absolutely.
And you got to accept it by packet only.
Yeah.
I've never played Wireshark that far.
It's just
TCP
with a nice front end.
Gotcha. Like I said, I haven't played with Wireshark like that. So.
Wireshark's the best.
I doubt it. The next one is, once again, doing the packet, then assigning, I did it differently this time. What I did was assign the variable to my website, and then what I did was put IP equals and then destination target, referencing the website. Once you click IP, it'll show you the whole packet. And for this is a command, I forgot the close bracket right here, but this is a quick command to do a quick DNS lookup. So you just do P for P and IP, it'll send this packet out and get the IP address. So already you know that the beginning offset of my IP address starts at 64. here's another way to go ahead and do a DNS query. Excuse me one second, I just wanted to show the difference. Well, anyway, at the top, the first line, see where it says google.com/27? Well, the reason why I like that function is in nmap, when you do a /27, you're going to have to wait. Not only are you going to have to wait, but that's going to sound off. Alarms, IDSs, firewalls, you got a whole slew of things that will pop up that you have the possibility of getting. What I like about with this is all it's doing is sending this one specific packet to port 80 and seeing if it gives a connection. So when I did it to Google, I put this result out for P out. Well, you have to see the rest. And then it'll dump all of our IP addresses on that specific subnet for Google. Scappy does multi-threading, so what I did was open up another command prompt and saw what was the difference between /27 and /24. And believe it or not, /24 had all the IP addresses. It was kind of strange that when I did the /27, the only servers that came up were analytical servers. So when they do a port 80, you know, Google Analytics, well, those servers on the 27 were analytical servers, these servers on /24 were the actual ones that are showing the pages when it, when you actually go there. So why they segregated, I don't know why, but I was able to find out that portion of information.
Yeah, we're just in a circle view of these
days. Yeah, but why would you be able to get information on that server being your analytical servers? If that's Google's prized possession, which all they care about is all the statistics and gathering information, why would they make that accessible out to the public? I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's reasons, maybe there's not.
They're giving you analytics as when you build like service for your pages.
That's a public service. You embed JavaScript that runs on their servers and then gathers all the information that's like around how long you're on the page. IP address and they
present all that. So that's why Google left China, because they probably, the China hackers are doing things like that and attacking those.
Google Analytics is down or whatever, slow, how the internet, how the pages exist. Yeah. Gotcha.
So the next one is...
You say you use a /27, I assume this is side
limitation,
right? /27, so you like scan it 5 bits of the address space.
Right. On the
least
bit. It'll do all the addresses.
So how do you do that with one packet? How do you scan,
I just showed you right now.
But that's not, that can't be one packet.
No. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's gotta be like 5 bits worth of packets.
It's not,
so
no, 32. It's not one packet. You're writing one packet.
Because
because it's /24, it has to keep going out.
How
so it automatically,
you know, like you were saying before, that it would set off intrusion detection systems.
Right.
How is that going to be different from doing that in any system where you just send off, you know, 32 packets to the subnet?
Change your time to live on a packet.
So it just changes the signature of the packet.
You change your time to live on the packet, where an NMAP, you can't change your time to live.
Okay.
So when you send out that information, that time to live is 64, it's going to blow. You send 100 packets with time to live of 64, you don't think the firewalls is going to be like, oh, what the hell is going on here? But if you send...
You send me one packet to each of those servers, right? Mm-hmm. So you are telling the server, I want to make a web connection, right? Let's start this negotiation so that you can send packets.
No. Because I'm only using the flag, the SIM flag.
Right, so you're sending the SIM flag, and they will then respond to SYNAP.
Right, but I won't respond back. Scappy won't respond
right.
back.
Right, so you have a half flag. You have a half-open connection, right?
Exactly.
So you have a half-open connection, and you're going across an entire 24, so you can...
Regardless of the DTL, half-open connection going across the entire 24 or 27 or... Almost any subnet is going to raise a flag.
It's going to raise a flag.
And you know what?
No matter who sends it,
it's
just IP.
And you're totally right. But from my aspect, when I did these testing, and, you know, I'm not going to put myself on the line and say something. But if this didn't work, guarantee agents would be at my house arresting me.
And you would be realizing your IP.
What? No tour, no nothing. Well, here you go, come get me, this is my house, this is where I live.
If you can change
it, take a chance, alright? You know, and
right,
the
if you only... If you the IP, you wouldn't send the
actual... If you're just doing a SIN, if you're just opening it with the SIN, you don't care about the response, it doesn't matter.
You have you to get... But then if you send it out, hold on, 1 second. If you send it out, and you don't get a response, what information are you getting back? Why are you sending it in the first place? Exactly.
Research.
So, well, you wouldn't want you. Like, wait, hold on. You're not gonna say researching because you want when you do research, you want information back to better determine what you're gonna move forward with. So, TCP dump versus SCAPI. The first line is doing the regular TCP dump, getting all the information. The next line is doing the same thing as TCP dump. Damn, I messed up on the slide. I'll get back to the slide. This wasn't the slide that was supposed to pop up. Come on.
Porn.
Sorry about the slowness.
What the? Something like 24, right?
I'll just speak briefly on this, and remember that the other slide was TCP versus SCAPM. To do a regular sniff, and this should have been the last slide, I made a mistake and put this up, but to do a regular sniff, yeah, this is going to look really horrible because it's in black and white, but when you do it in terminal, this is really, really colorful. It pretty much gives you a different color for protocols, for flags inside the protocol. So when you're seeing it inside terminal, it's a lot easier on the eye than looking at it in this way. But the reason why I put this up is, say on your box, you think you're getting attacked or something like that, or you just want to sniff out what's coming in and out your box or something, that's a command to just do port TCP and then port 80. The reason why port 80 is, nowadays we all know how much malware is infecting different sites and browsing web pages, and certain web pages have malware and all this stuff. What's cool about this is if you're running it and you get infected, chances of you finding exactly how, what protocol, I mean, a ton of information that you can gather from that, from here. Why is it, and now we're getting back to the TCP. Okay. It looks gibberish, but this is around the TCP dump. They have some good, useful information in here. But one thing by SCAPM overpowers, this is, you won't see this. And this is what I thought was the most ingenious. And ever since I saw this, from that day forward, I never used another, no Wireshark, no Interreal, or anything like that. In TCP dump, you're not going to be able to find information being broadcast. So, bad statement I say. Sometimes you will be able to find information being broadcast. Chances are you'll never find a device broadcasting its information, because TCP dump will wind up just giving you IP or stuff like that.
You
got
to know, like, you know, I'm
going to
give you everything you want.
You're totally right. You know what? But I choose not to remember those options. I don't care. It's too much. With me doing it in SCAPI with one line, I got 10 times more powerful information than me having to remember a flag to get this information. And this is why I feel it's more powerful. But I did the same sniff as I did in TCP dump, except this line right here, even if all this was gibberish and you couldn't understand it, you could understand what linksys.router.rvs4000/4-port gigabit security router with VPN. 9 out of 10 times, I mean, you're right, if you do the flags, you may be able to capture something like that. But without putting flags or anything like that, this information pops up. And you'll get a hell of a lot more information out of SCAPI, to me, like I said, without having to memorize options, than anything else. And the reason why would that be important? Because I'm going to have to pick on Cisco right now, because this is what I did. Cisco does the same thing. It advertises what iOS it is. So when Cisco advertises, it's 12.2, and that's an old iOS, but there's vulnerabilities on that, and that pops up on this, on a SCAPI sniff. I don't have to worry about anything else anymore. I can put all my other pen testing tools, everything aside. Why? Because I know that Cisco 12, I guess, give me one second. I know that Cisco 12.2 iOS has a vulnerability, so I'm going to go after that one attack first. And if I can attack and penetrate a router or a switch, I can forget about everything else, because now I can control everything at the router and switch level.
Can I launch that one item from shell without going to the SCAPI interpreter?
Can you?
So I can parse it to a graph or something like that?
Like you're looking for a specific thing, like you just said.
Right.
If I want to grab for where I'm looking for.
And pipe it out the file?
Yeah, right. Without launching an actual scatter shell, can I just, from regular unit shell, can I just launch that particular statement?
No,
just
you have
and pipe it into something else.
No.
You can, but you're going to want to do, inline pipe. You can pipe Python inline into the Python interpreter from the shell. And you can do kind of things that you do a lot of them. I tend to run around smacking people's hands with this in my shop, saying, hey, quit betting on that Python and the shell script. That's evil. But you can very, very quickly and easily do that.
This is the problem.
TCP dump is fantastic and you can do all kinds of stuff with it, but it's a pain in the ass at the end of the day if you do it typical. Wireshark the same way. It gives you a Wireshark is fantastic in a lot of ways, but if you need to programmatic with it. I just care about this one header. That's what I care about. Doing that Wireshark is difficult to impossible. So this gives you an ability, if you know just a little bit of Python, to say, just run this thing, give you just the information I want. And it'll just do it because it can do
the
real
bag interface. Another one thing, real quick, is I don't like the way it pipes into a file. When it pipes it,
you don't like what?
How Scapy pipes the information to the file. It literally pipes it like that. And then my way around this is I already wrote a program to detect by protocol, by IP, by almost like Wireshark. You know, you type in a protocol, all the packets of that one protocol pops up. Something like that.
Are you calling Scapy from within another Python program?
Oh, no. If you write a Python program inside of the top, you import, you can import that module.
Oh, so that's what it is?
Yeah. Import that module into your program, and then it'll actually go and run. Yes.
I don't want to digress too much, but the topic is like a smooth code package. Something like that, just Cisco CDP dump.
All I'm telling you is to listen.
No, but I mean the resulting part of it, saying it looks like if you use TCP dump,
that's right.
Throwaway. And you say you want to look for this type of Ethernet frame to get back that CDP info from.
I got you. Yes. So you can do that.
So is that what that top part is referencing?
There's one command before that, and it was on the other screen. There's still a ton of more slides, so I'm sorry I got to move forward.
Okay.
But remind me, and I'll get back to it, because there's one last thing, and if there's anything, I have to show this last bit of information.
All right.
So, and I still got...
Any larger fonts?
I'm just kidding. Are you going to put the slides online sometime?
No.
Seriously?
I'm dead serious. I'm not.
Can you
probably not? No. For the people that want, I'll give you my business card. Email me, and I'll email you the slide directly. I don't want to put.
Word we should say? Research.
The only reason why I don't want to put this up is I don't want to go to security conferences. Philippe is there, and he's going to start. And I'm not the type of person to argue anything. I don't play that. And there is certain things about it, why, there's more to it on why I don't want to post it up. Georgia and Ike know exactly why, but there's a reason why I don't want to put it up.
The Google business is recording,
but. That's true, right?
Edit that part out.
Please. So this is a regular scan with MNET, just to see exactly what ports are open. This is the same command as Scapy. Now, of course, sorry, one thing.
Creative Commons license.
Of course, you're not going to get the nice, pretty, port, state, services, and all written down. But if you're a security person, you should know automatically if they say a port, what protocol is running on that port. So. When you do it in Scapy, it's the same thing. This is my internal NAT port, so this part didn't come out. But you can see all the ports are listed here. one last thing. It would come out all scrambled and really gibberish if I didn't make this line of code. Well, this line of code is the format, exactly how it displays it back. So it'll display it all ugly, but I just wrote this one line in order to display it nice and pretty. Another thing that you can do is a accident peeping. You want to do this, so it's almost like a RCM peeping from NMAP to find out which nodes are live or anything like that. The line of code. And then this bottom line right here, I did it with, when it prints out, it'll print out the IP address source and then say whether it's alive or not. Another, you can do a TCP, and the reason why I like this is when you do NMAP, you can put ports and stuff, but can you really do a TCP ping with all these ports all in one shot with NMAP? And chances are, I mean, I did it once, it didn't work. I didn't care to try it because why not do it as Gappy and list all the ports, and it'll actually come out. And once again, with this line, the bottom line of code, it'll print out like a table, nice and neat, like the one that I just showed you before. Same thing on the UDP. Do you know why I would do UDP? I'm so sorry about this. This may be my job. Hold on one second. Is this? Hi, you're going to have to call me back later because I'm going to go over the presentation. Have a good one. UDPs, it depends on exactly what you're going to do on UDP, but the reason why I picked this is because, what's port 53? Exactly. If you have DNS, you pretty much are going to have the map to the entire infrastructure. You know, and it depends on how they go ahead. And I'm not saying that this line is going to hack DNS. You're just going out to probe the target to make sure port 53 is open. If port 53 is open, then you automatically know that it has DNS services on it. But once again, remember, all this information, when you do, you're not actually performing a hack. You're just going out and gathering this information. It's almost like footprinting, the first stage is enumeration of hacking. And
exactly.
Pretty much researching. Now, this is pertaining to the second slide. And sorry I jumbled it up like this, but this was the type of equipment that we have in the house. This is like very, very small portion to the equipment. And in 2008, when we did that VLAN and layer 2 presentation, this was a list of all the attacks. I would say about 20% of the attacks that are on here, you can actually do with Scappy. There's some that you can't, but one thing that I thought was real, real cool was VLAN hopping.
Did I do that right?
No, down here, VLAN hopping.
What's VLAN hopping?
Like your home meeting.
You know how VLAN is segregated, right?
Yeah.
Because the VLAN and then the number.
Yeah.
When you're actually gonna write, huh?
If you change the number in the header.
No, you don't want to change the number. Wait. There is a real good topic what I'm about to get into. Hold on. But I'll get into it and I'm gonna show you.
I think Google has a document on it. How to do VLAN on they actually have it on the site.
I'm completely up and running with the terminology.
You know what's the advantage of the VLAN? You what? You just get benched with the VLAN. It's essentially
the reason why VLAN don't provide security.
Okay.
You get more
like a bunch of
4-port deck gears
rather than if you have to do that.
So I just wanted to show like a similar representation of each ping with Scappy. For people that use it, I don't want to get too into this one slide. For ARP, one thing for, at least for me in security and doing pen testing, having a MAC address, that's like gold to me. It's really, really important. So in Scappy, you can actually go pick an IP address and it'll automatically spit back the MAC to you. So what it does is it goes out to the ARC table, gets that information, and provides you. And the reason why MACs are so important, what can you do with a MAC address? Very good. But once you
need the car back.
And you can start doing real hardcore research.
Actually, I have a little bit of a tangent question, but one of the things I was thinking about recently was, is there anything to filter out there, anything besides determining the manufacturer? Is there anything you get out of the MAC address the first, like, six, parts or whatever?
The
first four parts, that it will tell you anything more about the car than the manufacturer?
No. Just manufacture it and
then. Just because maybe there's a whole array. I mean, you know, this is going to be a pre-com.
Yep. There is something right now, and I haven't gotten to research because it's going to take a serious amount of time. But there is a way, and it's known inside the community. It's just starting to get out. Where they're starting to put Trojan horses on NIC cards. How they're able to do that, it's real technical, but it deals with reversing the hardware. So can they get more information out of that MAC address? I can't say yes or no to that, but I can't imagine them not getting more information if they're already starting to put rootkits.
Why isn't there packet filters on NIC cards?
Hold on, let me just finish this real quick.
If you need something like a VM with
SAM,
a VM, wherever
it's called,
too.
Yeah, well, but the VM, there's a problem with that. And if you do a buffer overflow and you know the exact memory spot, you can overflow it and jump into the host instead of the VM. But another topic in itself. But, George, to answer that question real quick, we went off on a tangent and I wanted to say something about what you said.
About getting information.
From the NIC card.
Trojan on the NIC.
Yeah.
Project you're working on.
It'll come back. It'll come back. So when you send out this right here arcing, what it does is it's going to go into a switch and get this information from the table and spit it back to you. Once you start getting this information, you can start performing man-in-the-middle attacks. And you can only perform really good man-in-the-middle attacks if you're on the inside of the network. If you're on the outside and somebody's telling you, oh, we're doing a man-in-the-middle, listen to what he says and don't be rude, but just brush him off like he's lying. Here goes ARC spoofing. Let's chat. If you do this in promiscuous mode, there's a quirk to this because sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. So it's, kind of weird. But the best way to do it is by getting your MAC address. Do it through your MAC address. That's your image of doing the man-in-the-middle attack. If you're able to switch your MAC address, do a MAC changer, and change your MAC address and perform a man-in-the-middle attack, have this server B connect to you, and then you scapy to send information, specific information to the server to get what you need back. So, way of performing a man-in-the-middle attack. As for your VLAN hopping, this is what I wanted to get into. The way we did VLAN hopping, there's a problem with VLAN hopping. You can hop, but you can't get information back, except towards the end. And I'll explain how you can get information back. But if you do it the way I'm going to say it, chances are you can be arrested. So be careful. The way Scappy handles the 802.1Q is it puts this one little packet on. There's no other program that I know that can give you that can let you put two encapsulation packets on. So you can put two 802.1Q packets, header tags, on the specific packet. The reason why you want to do that is, the way VLANs work, to answer, is if I want to go from this machine to this machine, I'm gonna have to know what VLAN they are. When I do know the VLAN that it is, it'll automatically stick the VLAN on here. When it passes this switch, it says, oh, the VLAN ID tag is 7. Alright, so switch 2 handles all the VLAN switches and then he passes that information. But now, if I'm an attacker, how am I gonna get this VLAN 7? I can't. Well, unless you put 802.1Q packets. So what you do is you put the first one for 1, it goes to 1, this switch automatically strips it. Doesn't know what to do after it strips. When it strips the packet and it sees it, now it says, oh wait, there's one more VLAN, let me pass it off to there, and then it'll send it to the switch, and then from the switch it'll send it off to here.
But those switches are VLANs.
You can put VLANs on the switches. So the way I was thinking is, in some environments, I know that they have 2 switches connected, and they'll have different VLANs on there, like that. Yes, I
mean. Based on the protocol itself, or design flaw of the protocol, or is this an implementation in the...
No.
Okay.
Design flaw. And then SCAPI, once you put those 2 on top, it'll... Now the problem, when I first started this, is if I'm able to send this information up, how can I get information back? Because nothing's been encapsulated 2 times on the way back. So, I'll leave you right there and I'll explain that in the next slide. Detecting the load balancer. Now, this is really, really kind of cool, and I didn't think this worked. And for 2 years it didn't work until last week when I found out the documentation and I was able to import all these dependencies and get the graphics in. But what I found was when there's a load balancer in front, of course, most of us, all of us should know how load balancers work. You know, this IP is too much traffic in, it'll put the information one way, if not, balance the information the other way. It's hard to be an attacker and determine whether there's a load balancer in front. Because if there is a load balancer in front, it's like, how are you able to determine whether there is or isn't, or go in a direction to go and attack, do an attack on a network or something like that?
All layers of load balancing?
Not all layers. I know I have it on web over here for Port 80, but I believe there's a couple of more. But the reason why I put the web stuff is because I personally did web pen testing stuff. Yeah. So in order to determine whether they had more instances of their website scattered across different IP addresses, the only way for me to really find out is whether they had a load balancer. So one way is to write this out. You send this packet. I only did it 100 because I didn't want to blow mine down in a portion. A really good thing is do 1,000. Because then you can get a really, really better determination. But 100, you'll get nothing. I mean, you'll get some information, but you're not going to get the information you need. So when you receive it back, there was 294 packets that kept going. 48 of them answered. And the next thing, what I did was, I wanted to visually see how the scattering went. Was it a lot? Was it a little bit? So I know that on my website, I don't have a load balancer. So I only got this. So when I typed in that last command, this graphic came up, and it was so only one direction. When you do it to Yahoo, and I should have did it to Yahoo, and just, I didn't want to, you know, sound any alarms for my home, but if you do it to Yahoo, if you do it to Google, MSN, any of these big places that you know that have load balancing, you'll see 5 or 6 different lines. What I thought was genius about the graphic is, if there's 5 or 6 lines, or 3, or whatever, how many lines come up, then you know chances are there's 4 or 5 different paths that the load balancer is using in order to move that information.
What are your X and Y axes?
Yeah, what?
It pertains to
areas.
Because can you go back? Mm-hmm. So you basically just opened up 100 connections to your web server, right?
Yep.
So how does, and then you're grabbing the how many milliseconds?
How many, yep. So the top is the milliseconds, the bottom is seconds.
So how does that determine what's at the load balance? That doesn't really determine that there's a load balancer in front of it, right?
Well,
because you could have a
I know
web server that's under, you could have a single web server that's under, that's handling a lot of traffic, and depending on how much traffic is doing at that exact second is how long it's going to take for your request to be serviced.
That's why I only got one line.
Right, no,
because
right.
That means that you're saying is I don't have a load balance.
So that graph is just for without load balance.
Without load balance.
So that graph, I assume your web server probably doesn't handle too much traffic.
No.
Right.
I don't have a lot of traffic.
That just basically means that from your network, your web server was able to handle each request within the same amount of time, right? But if you had a web server that was under higher load, right?
Like
you make one request that would say be handled in 2 milliseconds, and the next request would be handled in 4 only because you're competing with resources.
And it could be other people that are all going to the sub center at the same time. However,
so I meant the answer. He asked before, what are the axes? Like the X one.
So milliseconds and packets.
So 100 packets.
So all
but
that graph is really showing is that
packets on the X and then milliseconds on the Y.
Wow.
So it's simultaneous packets on the X. So I sent 100 packets at once and then the variance in response time is on the Y.
On
that packet 100 had a variance.
Yes. I don't know why I came out with 50. It should have been 100 because it's this is packets on the bottom and milliseconds on the side.
So I think it's a valid point. The intervariance is going to be wildly dependent upon the on a lot of external circumstances.
That's what you're basing
What I'm saying is that's what you're trying to determine whether you do have a load balancer or not.
But if the load balancer is put in the right,
I think every day is going to be flat like that. If it works perfectly, it's going to be flat.
You're right. Hold on. I got.
Is that variation actually?
I got
the load balancer.
No, it does that because the intervariance is going to be much larger. It's going to swamp any intervariance.
And I'm going to tell you this.
Classic method.
Yep.
Statistics. You can't
do that. Hold on. You're right. Why doesn't MSN, Google, or Yahoo, and they got shitload of money, why doesn't it show it like that? It should handle it like that, but it doesn't.
Well, not only. Was this from internally from your own network?
No. This is from internal going out to
website. So you went over public internet and all that other stuff?
And once again, you're not going to be able to say, because you got 6 lines, oh, there's 6 different paths or something like this. You're more or less getting a guesstimation onto how you're going to perform this attack. You're not going to use this graph and say, oh, yeah, he got a load balancer, he's doing 6 different paths, blah, 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 blah. It's not going to give you that information like that. But at least with something like this, you can better determine whether they have a load balancer or not.
But even that one line without any load balancer, right? If you have a heavily loaded server, depending on the time of the day, that line is going to be—it's not going to be straight like that.
Exactly. You're going to see a stagnancy.
So the question in my mind is: given one server without a load balancer, you can have wildly varying times.
Right.
Wildly varying.
But you're going to see, but you're going to see them spike in different spots on this graph. Where if it's a load balancer, you're going to see it stream. Sometimes it streams in an upwards, different angles. And this was stupid of me not to put another graphic on here to cross-reference.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I understand, because to me, I understand completely what you're talking about, Kevin. This is, if nothing is being manipulated, this is the flat network you're hitting externally. The fact that it happens to be 2 milliseconds is really cute, beautiful, but it actually makes the point even clearer. For all 100 packets, that's what you got back. Right. There's no variation, there's no load balancing going on.
Right.
If you had done the other slide to show in contrast, maybe it would have been more interesting. But I think your point is very, very clear from that.
One more quick thing.
Well, no.
When you go to Yahoo, when I do it to Yahoo, I'll get the scattered packets. But if I do it to Google, I won't get packets all over the place. I get lines. And I won't get a straight line.
No.
I get them horizontal like this. And it'll be like 9-10 different of them. So.
But you have to do, in order to actually make sense of that, with at least just one tool, you've got to run this test again and again and again, right?
Remember, you're not going to do this tool and say, all right, great, now you got a load balancer. That's not what this is for. It's just giving you an estimation whether they have a load balancer or not.
I'm just questioning the validity of the information. If you're doing,
by all means.
Say, for instance, you just do one run.
Mm-hmm.
You do one run. And if, depending on what you're getting, what time of day it is, depending on the amount of resources you use, you can get wildly different results. Just whether it's load balanced or not,
you can
get wildly different results.
You can.
So if you want to switch into,
but then what you do, what that means. I was going to say, all right, so when you get those wild things, open up another process. Have Cappy sniffing, use another process, and send the packet out. So when he sends it out and it comes back, you can start determining IP addresses. Oh, well, the load balancer got this IP address, or the firewall didn't let this go through because I got this IP address. The whole thing is to start gathering intel.
Right.
It's not going to say, you do this once, yeah. Oh, all right, this load balancer has 7 different connections on the inside.
It's
like
monitoring 5 minutes a day.
Exactly. It's not going to do so.
It's just going to do static shock.
But the reason why, anybody
uses like NTR?
Wait, let me finish, because this is the most important thing real quick.
Good, sir.
And bringing up the load balancer, this was... So again, I did another packet. I did it to tub.cn, China. I figured China's fucking with us. Why not? So I wanted to find out, the IP address. I go and I set up the packet. Of course, the IP address is different because that's a different China website. But if you want, you can write those down. I just did the layering and stuff, basic. That I showed you earlier, but the reason why I did it like that is so I did an STR IP and it converted all this information into this. And the reason why that's important is because when you write a program, if you can actually start packaging your program and then convert it over to binary, you can stick it in Scapy and let Scapy push it out to programs. But I'll get to that in a second. And the reason why I said you can put Scapy into programs, this is the last slide, is because, for instance, if I do one of these, right, and I write a program, I can bring it over to binary, I stick the binary inside the raw payload, it'll send it. So now if I'm a malicious hacker or something like that, I can go and actually start putting malware in here, start putting crazy stuff, viruses, Trojan horse, whatever it is. And on top of putting that in there, I can also make it a malformed package with only a destination and no source. So when it hits the destination, it can go bonkers. Who knows what could happen, or you, depending on how you write it. Alright, that's the road. That's the end. But this is one thing that I gotta show. I know, it looks crazy. I didn't get to pause. I'll scroll it up to the top so it looks a little bit more detailed.
I think you need to increase that font size.
Yeah.
You know what, I'm not gonna increase the font size. You're gonna get out and you're gonna walk. This is the last story. This is pertaining a little bit to load balancing, but not too much, but it touches on the topic. I'm on my way to Vegas in August, right?
Why would people go to Vegas in August?
Oh, okay. once a year.
Once a year, even worse.
Once a year, first weekend of August is the number one security conference in the world. So I took a flight from New York
over.
I took a flight from New York over to Vegas on Virgin American. Virgin American now gives out free Wi-Fi internet access on their planes. So I'm like, cool, let me get in, let me start. And I didn't have no intentions of doing anything malicious or anything like that. Had no thoughts in my head. But one thing came across my mind. What if Al-Qaeda or one of these terrorist groups is on this plane and knows how to hack just as good as I do? Can you take down this plane? So I would think, nah, I couldn't take down a plane. This is impossible, So
they separated the pilot.
But you want to know what? For the thing that you're kidding about, wait until you get to the end of the story. Then you're going to be like, no,
how is your head wet?
No, no, there's no lock on the plane. There's no lock. It's free, open, you know? So,
you're reading the pilot
email. All of a sudden, I'm starting to get some crazy spikes on my monitor. So I'm like, hold on, let me just run a sniff. So I run a sniff, but I made a mistake. I put my address as the gateway, not realizing I put it as the gateway. Now I forgot to put my address to sniff out my traffic. So I hit send. Well, what do you know? I start sniffing out the IP address that I'm looking for. Now, if I'm on a plane, I should not be able to get a gateway information off that plane. That should be impossible. Let alone not even get that information, but where is the gateway connecting to?
Well, TraceRoute showing it, right?
I mean, it would, but hold on. Hold on. We think about this. You're on a plane. You do a TraceRoute. Hold on. I'm going to fix that in 1 second. You think on a plane, you're going to have some type of firewall or something like that, you know, to stop that, you know? So, of course, that came across my mind. Why not do a trace out? Why not get the IPs? Well, you can't go out on the plane. I don't know whether it's the firewall rules. I don't know what it is. You can't gather information going outside. Like, if I wanted to find out what node and how it hops, I'm almost positive it's got to be some firewall or something, because the planes aren't going to connect, they're connecting to a satellite.
So you assume it into some kind of application, some firewall, proxy?
Something. Because proxy, you can't find, you can't see the hops.
But you can surf the external web.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could be some proxy or something.
I don't remember actually using the internet on a plane as well.
And that's real good. Well, but anyway, to make the long story short, I send it to this address. I get some weird IP addresses, I start pinging these IP addresses. Certain IP addresses are in here. They go to certain places that I choose not to disclose where they go to. But I should not have been able to get that information. That was really, really bad information. Almost to the point of this Virgin American servers, what they're using, what protocols, everything like that. And anyway, to make the long story short, we start to land, and now the amounts of traffic is going through crazy.
Oh, no, God,
I gotta really, really show you one of them.
Scary, actually.
Oh,
yeah,
when
I shouldn't be on this.
No, when I show you this, then
I go to showmyip.com.
Well, in any case, it's somewhere at the top or anything like that. I was able to not only get tons of traffic, but after converting some of the information, it was real crazy what I got out of it. Thank God that I'm a good person and not a bad person, because I definitely could have sold a lot of information. eBay accounts.
Oh, yeah.
People logging into their bank accounts and transferring money. No encryption.
What? How the banks?
This is the one part that I can't understand. Because I'm sniffing at the gateway, you would think once they made the connection to their bank, it would do, you know, the handshake, then encrypt the SSL, and I don't know why it didn't. I wasn't going to give you any credit cards, anything like that, but I have eBay accounts, eBay username passwords, email accounts.
You're saying that locally the data was encrypted, like the people, you know, the CDSSL lock,
and when I'm sniffing, I'm getting that information. It's not encrypted. Don't believe me. Sit down for like 2 hours right here.
Research.
And take a lunch. No, you know? But definitely.
What's going on is that, I mean, I don't know how you do it. I've been doing this with firewalls, but they're actually proxying it from the firewall. So the firewall somehow or another
Huh? You shouldn't be able to.
No, they should be able to. You would have to, but at the same time, on the local land of the airplane, that shit should have been encrypted. You shouldn't have been able to do anything else.
Yeah, but we're doing some kind of cell land in the middle so that they can actually be like...
But that's outside the land. That's going to be outside the land.
But if you still need that cell certificate, right here.
Well, yeah, see, all right, wait, just to avoid all this SSL stuff, yeah, I know that SSL was broken, right?
Yeah,
with SSL, then you just go and get this, break SSL, break the encryption, and then you go. So,
versus
sniffing, totally. I mean, it is totally different, but I'm just saying, I don't know why. I can't explain, I don't have a reason. But I do have the information. You want to sit here and go through the logs and look out on some of that.
Yeah. And this is what people use the internet and shit like that.
On the plane!
A new Airbus that has all the airplane controls over the network.
No.
I don't know how to implement it.
So hold on.
I read into it as much. But I knew it might even be Wi-Fi. But
look at the new...
It's a guy who helped you get like a rabbit's
Wi-Fi network.
I don't want to learn it anymore. No. Look at the new Boeing planes. They are now remote control. The pilot is there just to sit, just in case if something goes wrong. But from take off to landing, the pilot does not touch that.
What happens if you lose network connectivity?
Forget about network connectivity. What about if I just started throwing packing connections? What if I did a ping of death? What if I started fucking around with the controls? I can start bringing fucking planes down?
A lot of these like fly-by-wire things. You know, when there's industrial automation involved, the protocols that they're typically using are things that are so weird, most of us have never even seen them. Mm-hmm. You know, if you deal with stuff like,
I think,
these are critics.
Department OS in the world, right?
Or something elevators. Like, you know, if you're dealing with, let's say, like automation in terms of like industrial application, open a valve, you know, adjust an analog, whatever it happens to be. A lot of times you deal with these sort of, there's all these weird low source protocols. There are no snippers for it. Mm-hmm. There are no ways, I mean, there are easy ways to break it if you know how they work, but they're not, there's no transport for them over IP. There's no transport for them over TCP. There's just, they just don't do anything like that. You know, they're
Airbus, I think it's TCP IP.
I was going to say, that's the Zigbee chipset.
Yeah, yeah.
That's for meters. That's put in traffic lights. Police, fire department, EMS, and next year or the following year are going to have that installed on their cars, so they can automatically change lights, pacemakers.
They're not going to do that again. They did that in Chicago in like the 70s. It caused so many traffic accidents.
That's also inside pacemakers and numerous different types of things. It's called Zigbee technology.
Yeah, but so Zigbee is just like the lower level communication. So you can establish like a link with Zigbee.
Yep.
The actual protocol, at least since you're speaking over Zigbee, is not Zigbee per se.
It can
be, but it doesn't have to be. Right. For things like medical devices, a lot of times the vendors will kind of create their own thing. It may not be very secure, but then they actually be... There's an easy way to do it. They're obscured in such a way that, we only send one packet every, you know, for a fifth of a millisecond once every 10 minutes.
Which is almost the same thing as IP, and then TCP is the protocol. So Zigbee will be IP, and then there's a protocol in there.
But that's only transport mechanism. Right. If you get into an area like...
What I'm trying to get at is, if the underlying protocol, which is Zigbee, is vulnerable, no matter what you put in there, it's going to be going regardless.
So
you're saying if it's at the
chip level and there's a vulnerability for it, then it, no matter what you do, it's going to be vulnerable. And the reason why I brought that up was because there's a gentleman right now, it's called Travis Goodspeed, good friend of mine. He has a belt buckle. So, and he does this for parties. He gives out certain belt buckles for girls, certain belt buckles for guys. You know, you click it. Lights up a girl, you go and talk to her, and you have the same belt buckle type of thing. But at the same, and it uses Zigbee technology, but at the same time, That same technology, you put that, take that belt buckle and put it by somebody that got a pacemaker, that person's going to die. So if he was walking right by Dick Cheney and you clip that, believe you me, Dick Cheney is dying. There's nothing that you're going to do about that. And why? Because it doesn't know how to stop.
This is your mail order?
Listen, if you want, I got the technology in the house, you know. I forgot, can you just remember this?
So what are the things though? It's interesting.
Thank you, that was a great meeting.